Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to another episode of Who's Your Daddy podcast, where we talk about all things gay, LGBTQ, from dating to coming out to having kids, all of the things. This season, we're focusing a lot on coming out stories and kind of like the before deciding to have kids, because we're in this period right now where we're waiting for things to happen with surrogacy. We can't talk a lot about it right now, but we will be talking about it soon.
Yeah, because like once you become parents, like you're parents, but you were a person before that.
Yes.
So who are the people before that? And what?
Who are the people?
What happened? What led them to this crazy thing called parenthood?
I'm really excited for our guests today.
Me too.
Yeah. Because these are two guys that we've been following for quite a while.
But we've never actually like spoken in person or like directly online.
So this is our first time ever speaking to them. Ever.
Ever.
And I'm like really excited to get to know them. It's like a first date, a first friend date. Let's go. So we have Stuart and Francis here from TikTok and Instagram. Infamous couple. Lovely. I love your guys' videos so much. Welcome to the podcast, Stuart and Francis.
Yay. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
I love that intro, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
And you're joining us from across the pond.
Yeah, yes. We're in London.
Yeah. They're in London.
What time is it right there? Right, like there right now. It's 9 p.m.
It's like 9:15. Yeah,
The evening. Our best friend in the other house, like
just looking after
them.
The baby, and
we're in the office.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Aww. And they are dads to two, Rio and Rebel. Correct.
Yes, that is correct.
Correct.
Yes, and ages are
5.5 months and nearly 2.5.
So you are busy.
I love those names, by the way.
Oh, thank you so much.
Oh, yeah, thank you. It is really busy, actually. Our friend is just over there, and she was trying to put a pizza in the oven, and she was like, can you actually put the pizza in for me? And I was like, because she was holding the baby, I was like, yeah, it's really hard, isn't it? It's
so that's hard. The one thing that people don't tell you about. When you have a baby, you have to do everything with one hand. Start practicing right now, doing like one-handed life.
Yeah.
Because you've got a baby in one hand, you do everything with the other.
Yeah. Do you have to switch like sides so that you don't end up like crooked?
Well, I mean, I like my left side is stronger, but I've been thinking to myself like recently, why have I got like a bad shoulder on my left side? And it's because of like all the carrying.
Yeah.
Apparently they start, that ends your, you know, I'm going to be much better. But yeah, everything's...
You've like become kings of multitasking.
Yeah, a lot of that.
Before we get into babies things, I want to know a little bit about you, because I think we started following each other, or we started following you, once babies were in the picture, because that's when we were kind of starting to think about our family. And so like gay parents were definitely on our like FYP.
I saw you guys on TikTok and I was like, goals, goals, goals. That's what I want in my life, Michael. Make it happen now.
I know. Even the accents too, but right? I don't know if I'll get there.
That's another thing I was going to say is that watching your videos, you guys narrating anything. You could narrate going to the bathroom and I would just be like, it's just you're... Yeah. Accents and the way that you narrate things, I love so much. You have no idea.
Well, that's when we talk about our previous musical theatre career. That's where we learned to speak more properly. Because I'm actually from a place called Wales, which has a very different accent to how I speak. But my parents aren't Welsh, so I didn't speak Welsh at home. But have you ever heard a Welsh accent? Do you know what it sounds like? Welsh is it's lovely. I'm from Wales and I speak like this. That's what a Welsh accent
really?
Sounds like. And that's what I grew up around.
It's like that show that we've been watching.
It's do you know Catherine Zeta-Jones? Do you know Tom Jones? They're like very famous Welsh people.
Tom Jones. Yeah.
They're old.
I say yeah, but I don't actually know. Michael, do you know who
Tom
Catherine Jones
Zeta-Jones.
Okay, I don't know who Tom Jones
is. You know,
I don't,
okay, this is it really. This is testing your knowledge. Have you ever watched the film Titanic?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you know Titanic? Like, do you really know it?
Oh, do I really know it?
That's a difficult question.
It was. I don't really know it.
I've watched the ship go down in slow motion multiple times.
There's a hand on the window.
Some funny videos of that. Have you ever watched the Titanic sink in reverse? Or like, not sink, it's really coming up out of the water, but it's pretty hilarious because you have people shooting up out of the water. Yeah. They're hitting things, they're going up. Oh, it's so bad.
This is Matthew's like dark humor where he used to like drown his Sims characters in the pool that he built them.
Oh, did you play Sims? I'm like, it's just problematic. There you go.
It's funny. But I mean, that's the first. Maybe that's kind of the that's kind of one of the first moments talking to that. Maybe I didn't realize I was gay, but when I look back, I'm like, wow, that was a gay.
Leonardo DiCaprio, because both of us, we just like, oh my god, loved it.
I had posters of him on my wall in my bedroom, and I was just obsessed with him.
And then tell the story about your mom. That's really interesting.
Yeah. So basically, I had posters of like Leonardo DiCaprio from Titanic. I was 12 at the time, maybe my age, and. My brother had like soccer, football, and he had all these like soccer players on his wall posters. And he was like, Francis, why do you have posters of Leonardo DiCaprio up in there? And my mum went, well, Emrys, you have posters of boys in shorts in your bedroom. So what's the difference? And I was like, yes mum.
get it. Oh, that is great.
That's funny.
I didn't realize I fancied him. But looking back, I'm like, yeah, I fancied him.
Yeah. You're like, oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I think my earliest crush, or like the person that I was kind of enthralled with at a young age, fourth grade, fifth grade, even maybe third grade, I think it was...
Second grade.
Was it... Okay, sorry, I get these two people mixed up all the time. Don't blame me. Aaron Carter, Jesse McCartney.
So...
Aaron Carter, I remember.
Which one would be like... the like teeny bopper singer.
Well, they're both teeny bopper singers. I have a feeling it's Aaron Carter.
Okay,
that's my Aaron Carter, that. I'm sure. I think that's probably who you're thinking of.
I
like,
think so.
I want candy.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Okay, yeah. I had I had posters of him in elementary school, and I wanted to dye my hair blonde. I wanted to like have a puka shell necklace, and I wanted to be a singer, songwriter, actor, magician.
Yeah,
like all the things.
If I could be in NSYNC, that's what I wanted to do as a child. Like, I wanted to be Justin Timberlake.
Oh, God.
It didn't work out.
But anyway, I'm going to finish my Titanic story because your listeners are going to be like, why are they talking about Titanic in the first 5 minutes? There's a famous bit in the movie where he's like, is anyone out there? Can you hear me? He's like on the boat looking for the dead people. Is anyone out there? Can you hear me? And that's a Welsh accent. Basically, that's what a Welsh accent sounds like.
Full circle.
Oh, I thought we were into your coming out story.
No. I love this arc. I love this arc. So I'm actually from Wales. Have you ever heard a Welsh accent? Do you know Catherine Zeta-Jones? Have you seen the Titanic? When they get to the point where he's like, is anyone out there? That's a Welsh accent.
That was an amazing story arc.
Yeah,
but when Francis was talking about how his mom like was defending him with the posters in his room, I was like, yes.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot
Leonardo DiCaprio was my gay awakening. And then, is there anybody out there? That's a Welsh accent.
Yeah. Okay.
Wow. He's such a good storyteller.
It's just all relevant.
It's just, Francis is taking us on a journey, and I'm just
that
here
was
to
amazing.
Enjoy it. This is great.
Anyway, I'll let you ask questions again.
Let's start with where you grew up having your Leonardo DiCaprio poster in your room. So where did each of you grow up? Francis, we just got to start with you because now we need to know where Leonardo DiCaprio was gracing the walls of your bedroom.
Yeah, so I grew up in Wales, which is like 4 hours west of London. It's like a different country, but it's part of the UK. It has its own language, but English is more widely spoken, but Welsh is like...
He spoke Welsh.
I spoke Welsh at school. Like, I learned to write and read in Welsh. It's like, it's a big deal. It's a very like, it's like a Celtic country. So it's like, they're very, like, they're good at music. They're good at dance. It's like a big part of what we do. But I'm one of four boys. Yeah, I've got three brothers. I had a very eclectic upbringing. My parents worked and lived with special needs people. Mm. And that's kind of what I experienced growing up. Like, it was the most amazing, growing up. And I think my mum is Dutch, my dad's Norwegian, but they met in the UK in 1980. So they're both like very worldly, kind of very, like, my mum's parents had gay friends in the like 50s. You know, like, they were just really open-minded to my mum's Dutch. And Dutch people tend to be quite open-minded, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
I felt like I had really accepting parents. However, growing up in the 90s and early 2000s in a small town, like, where there was no exposure to, there was no positive gay representation in the media. Everything was negative, you know, all the coming out story. There was nothing to look to. So I didn't know I was gay until I was 16, maybe. I was, you know, bullied, classic bullied at school and things like that. And I never told anyone because I didn't know. So it's like, they're calling me gay. I know, I feel like I'm different, but so it was, I suppose it was hard, even though I had accepting parents. But if I was, with what we know now, if I had a gay son, I feel like we'd be a lot more better equipped to help.
Right.
How big was the town that you grew up in? Like, are we talking like...
Oh, tiny. Like, tiny village. Tiny. Like, sheep and hills and on a farm, basically. Like,
so how many people were you, like, in school with? Like, how big was, like, the class of students that you were with?
Yeah, so in the whole school, there was, like, 450 people, so...
Okay, that's about the size of my town where I grew up, so I can kind of...
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But, so, this is so funny, I don't know if you ever listened to us talk about this, but I grew up in a town of, like, 6,000 people. I had two out gay friends. Like,
wow.
And Matthew grew up in a town of 50,000 with, like, a high school class the size of my entire school.
1,700, and, I think, 1,800.
And, like, he... Yeah. Hardly knew any gay people, and it was like super weird.
Yeah, no, it was super weird growing up in my town of 50,000 people. But we were, I came from an area that's very polarized. So you had super conservative people, big Trumpers now.
Yeah.
And then you have super liberal people, A and B, just right there next to each other, coexisting.
Yeah. So, Stuart, where did you grow up?
So I grew up in London. So I live literally like 20 minutes from where I actually grew up. Sorry, just doing my hair.
I grew up in London.
I grew up in London and very different to Francis. Like my parents, my dad's like was a kitchen fitter. My mum was like a housewife and just very like normal, average family. But I didn't necessarily have the same coming out story as Francis did, like the same acceptance to start with. Now it's a different story, but at the beginning was tough with my parents.
Like, did you have siblings? Like, did you grow up like a single
child? I've got one sister, but she's 8 years younger than me. So we didn't really grow up together because by the time I was 16, I moved out of home and went to drama school, which was like central London. And so by the time she really got to an age where we could kind of hang out, I was gone really.
Oh, right.
So I grew up like an only child, really. But then when I went to drama school, I literally had like an awakening. I was like around all these gay people and I was like, I was like, I understand now all these feelings I had when I was in secondary school and primary school. Yeah. I didn't realize that was a gay feeling until I went then to drama school. And then it was just like my eyes were open and it was just like the best 3 years of my entire life. It kind of like shaped me into the person I am right now. It's like, it was just amazing.
Amazing. Incredible. How good of a like performer do you have to be to go to drama school?
And was this like a boarding
16?
School kind of situation?
That seems very intense.
It's more like university. Yeah. So it's like university 3-year course.
It's a degree.
Oh. It's a degree course. It's like very. It's the top school in the UK for musical theatre. It's very competitive to get in.
God.
But we both went to the same school, but different times. But I had the exact same experience. So I'm from a small town in Wales, and and then coming to London and suddenly being around other gay people and also other people that were interested in theatre. And theatre is this, you know, I love that gay people tend to like theatre. It's you know, it's expressing yourself. It's fun, fabulous, and it's like meeting your people. And we both had that at different times, but that meeting of acceptance.
I find this really fascinating because both of you grew up in a way where like you knew something was different, but you didn't really have the kind of like
vocabulary.
Background or vocabulary to kind of assign what that
and
difference
completely
was.
Opposite like demographics of
totally opposite demographics.
And I went to a really rough school. Your school wasn't rough, was
no, it?
No,
it wasn't rough. It was
like there was fights every day. There was people like And because I wasn't very academic as well, I was always in the bottom classes, and that just this meant that I was with the most rough, like, scary people. So just my coping mechanism in that.
I thought they made that stuff up on the British shows, you know? You watch, like, a British movie, British shows, and these guys are getting in fights at school, and it's kind of like, I think of Elite. But
does that not happen at your school? Did that not happen?
Oh, God, no.
Did that not happen?
Uh-uh.
No, our school was not like that, but our school was tiny. I mean, just like Francis, it's like a small school. There's a lot less time and places for you to, like, cause problems without people seeing it.
I literally thought they were making that up in the Netflix
show. I thought everything was like Heartstopper and everybody was just, like, emotionally intelligent.
Yeah. Getting along and, like, super liberal and wonderful.
And we just like to go play rugby.
No. Not at that age, though. Like, people were just so mean. And so I just literally, in that era of my life, I just didn't speak. I just was really, really quiet.
It's kind of interesting. So that era of my life, I threw myself into my schoolwork. So I excelled academically because I am very good at retaining information. I've got a bit of a photographic memory. I obviously have intelligence. I'm not saying I remember a lot of
Excuse me, but I'm smarter than everybody else.
No, you know how sometimes we'll measure intelligence? It's like, I had to learn to be intelligent. I wasn't naturally like, I'm not good at maths, but what I could do was train, work so hard that I knew that when I got an exam paper that I knew I'd looked at all the years before, that I opened the exam paper and I laughed because I'd done that much revision that the questions were just slightly different to the year before. That's how hard I worked.
Wow.
And could retain information.
In these academics, you were like, I'm going to be top of the class. I'm going to excel. I got this. But you didn't know.
We got straight A's and everything.
Right. But at that point, you didn't know you were gay.
No, I didn't know I was gay, no.
So that's interesting to me.
Yeah, that was my way of fighting back, because I think when I was younger, I felt very different. And then it was like, high school, you know, you face more bullies. There's like people, teenagers are not very nice people. So that was my way of like being strong, was like, I'm just going to excel in everything and get A's in everything.
It's so funny how consistent that theme is amongst so many people that we've talked to.
Just consistent perfectionism.
Yeah.
Of like, you know, I'm going to excel. I'm going to do the best. I'm going to do better than everyone else. And everyone's going to freaking love me because they can't, like, deny myself or my sexuality.
Yeah.
I feel like I was the same as that, but not academic. I used to sit in my class, like my science class, and used to imagine like receiving like an award for some kind of acting job or something, and like be like, thank you to all my bullies for getting me here. You're the reason. Like, I used to like imagine that in my head all the time.
I kind of had these like moments of like imagination grandeur of kind of defeating all of my peers and all of my people who made me feel bad about myself.
I'm just thinking of like Ron in Harry Potter looking into the mirror and like seeing himself win the Quidditch Cup or something, whatever it's called.
Was me, but I was like,
you guys just envisioning that in your brain.
I had like a college full ride scholarship, like I had all the things, or just a crowd of people behind me going like, yes, we love you.
Okay, so I feel like Stuart was going to jump into his coming out story at some point too.
Go for it.
Oh, yeah. So my coming out story is, I went to, obviously, drama school. I was there for my first year. And I knew my parents wouldn't necessarily understand it. We didn't know any gay people growing up whatsoever. So I always had this thing, like, if they ask, I'm going to tell them, but I'm not going to openly tell them. So I'm going to wait for my mom or my dad. I knew it was going to be my mom, but wait for my mom to say something. And then if she said something like underhand, trying to cut me down or whatever, I would tell her. And so I was in my second year of college. So I was like 17, maybe coming up to 18. And I was packing my stuff up. I was going to Panto. So Panto is like a big show that happens over Christmas every year in the UK. And I was packing up, and I wasn't going to go home that year for Christmas because I was away with the show. And she said, what are you going to do on Christmas Day? And I said, oh, I'm actually going to spend Christmas Day with Ryan, who was at the time was my boyfriend. And she was like, Ryan, why are you spending Christmas Day with Ryan? And I was like, oh, because we're boyfriends. And she was like, you're joking. You're joking. you're gay. And I was like, she's like, that's disgusting.
No, she said that.
Yeah, and that was it. And that was that. Then we didn't really have much of a relationship, like, for a while, for like 6 months. Like, it was really, really hard. But the thing that growing up over these past couple of years, like, my mum and my dad are beautiful people. They just only got fed, like, news and, like, you know, back when they were growing up,
totally.
My dad, when he was growing up as a child, he, like, if he came out as gay, he would have gone to prison in the UK. Like, it would have been like, and so it's just a different generation trying to understand what these feelings are inside of me and their son. You know, even having children, you have such a vision for your children's future, even without meaning to. Like, I'm really going to try not to have my vision cast onto my children, but we love musical theatre. We would love our children to love musical theatre.
Yeah.
But, and so you have this vision, and if your children don't follow that vision, sometimes it's really hard to be able to maneuver that vision and then go forward. My parents are incredible, and my mum right now is, like, so incredible. She still does our washing all the time.
No,
like,
way. I love that.
But at that moment, it was just a jarred situation where she just couldn't understand why anyone would ever want to be gay. Yeah, she just assumed having a gay life meant that you were going to be lonely and sad. And that's what she kept repeating to me, is like, I just don't want you to be lonely. I don't want you to have that, you know, a sad
existence. That's another common theme that I keep hearing, is like mothers and fathers thinking and feeling that the big thing that's hard for them to get over when people come out and it's unexpected is, oh my God, I don't want you to struggle in life because of all these barriers and prejudice.
Well, and I think I think my parents, and I mean people with parents who are our age, right? And so our parents being in their like 60s, 70s, like kind of went through the 80s. Which is like a super scary time.
Yeah.
And like, that's essentially what
AIDS pandemic.
That was like the painted picture of like what the gay community was like, right? Like, oh, you are gay, you're going to get AIDS and like probably die, right? Yeah. And so I think
that was ingrained in the mentality and then just like reinstated in the 90s, early 2000s with, I don't know, the presidencies and the kind of conservative nature of all that.
I just remember my mom being like, I just want you to be safe. And I knew what that meant. But then my sister was like, I'm just concerned, or like, she just feels like, I feel like things are going to be, I don't want this to be hard for you. Like, I just, I think she's like foresaw certain things being more difficult just because you're not straight.
Totally. But it's the total opposite.
It is.
I feel like being gay has been the best experience of my entire life.
100%.
I've got more friends than anybody I know. I have like, I have the most amazing social life. Like I all the things that my mum was worried about, it's the complete opposite for my life. Like I feel like we're so accepted.
You know what the other thing about that is, which I think is amazing, is that I've noticed this a little bit more because, like, I don't know, being in the content creator space and doing businessy things, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I've noticed that gay people, LGBTQ plus people look out for each other in a different way when it comes to like corporations working for the man or like whatever kind of line of work you're in. LGBTQ plus people tend to look out for each other.
There's a little nepotism in the gay community of like, oh, okay, well, if you had like five candidates in front of you and one of them was gay, like you're probably just going to like preference them. You're like making the hiring decision, you know?
Which is kind of like double-edged sword, horrible, because we never want anybody to...
But they also know how good they're going to be at the job, I think.
Right, I know. And that's the thing, is when you can like see someone like, and relate with them, and you know they have like, you have that shared experience, it just brings you into a whole different level.
But I'm interested, Francis, because your parents were so accepting in general, so like what was your experience through that coming out journey?
So when I in my first year of drama school, I had my first gay experience, and I just felt like this door had been opened, and it was just like, I felt
the floodgates are open, floodgates are roaring through.
I just felt so alive, and I just felt this thing in me that I wanted to tell them pretty straight away. That kind of experience happened around Christmas time, and then in the Easter break, I decided that I was going to tell them. I was pretty sure my mum would be accepting. I was unsure about my dad, but you know, just because he's a man, and I just wasn't sure about, you know, how does it feel to see your, hear that your son is gay. And I, you know, I planned the day I was going to do it, and I went there. My little brother at the time, who's 6 years younger than me, he was maybe 11 or 12. I'd kind of also softened the blow. Like I'd got my parents into Will and Grace. So they loved Friends. we were loved Friends. And I got them the box sets of Will and Grace, and they were loving Will and Grace because I love Will and Grace. So I knew, it was like, well, if they're watching that and they're finding that funny, they must be accepting of gay people. But anyway, you can talk yourself off, you know, into a funny place. So I sat them down and I tried to get my little brother out of the room. I was like, he's called Yori. I was like, Yori, please, can you get out of the room? And they could sense that something was happening. And little bitch, he was like hanging outside the room, listening to the door.
How dare.
I didn't have to say it, but I was like, you know, I'm gay, right? That's what I said. And they jumped to their feet and they were like, I get emotional even just thinking about it, but they were just like, they were so happy because they were worried that I would only find out much later and much older in life.
Oh,
and
my
that
God,
I,
my God.
They have a sense of sadness around that. So they were just so happy that I'd figured it out then.
So
and
they had an an inkling or like an intuition.
My mum knew when I was three. She knew when I was three. She just knew. She's very
Was it the Leonardo DiCaprio poster or I don't know. I'm just trying to think like what could have hinted at
I suppose maybe one of the key moments for her was she's got really good strong feelings, but one of the key moments is when she asked us what she was going to make us, like, she makes like dressing up costumes or clothes. She makes loads of things. So she's like, I'm going to make you some dressing up costumes. What do you want to be? And my brothers wanted to be, I want to say this politically correct way, American Indians. Is that the right way to say it? What's the correct way to say
A Native American.
Like,
oh, yeah. No, Native Americans.
Cut. My brothers wanted to be Native Americans, and they had all these fun costumes. And I wanted to be Mother Mary. That's who I wanted to be, like the Virgin Mary. I wanted my clothes. When you look at the photo, I've got a photo of this moment. When you look at the photo, I thought I wanted to be Little Red Riding Hood. But then my mum's like, no. You were always completely fascinated by Mother Mary in the Christmas play and this kind of red and blue costume that she used to wear. So I wanted to be Mother Mary.
And I think that is hilarious.
That was probably a clear sign for her.
Were you Catholic?
No, I wasn't Catholic. I did grow up with religion. It was Christian, but it is kind of.
I just know Mary
Christian.
Plays such a big role in Catholicism because I grew up Catholic.
So did I.
But we have like a prayer, like the Hail Mary, and people hear that we have like a prayer for Mary, people are like, "What? There's a." You guys have like a separate prayer for Mary.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just so funny that like even though you weren't Catholic,
Francis
that's
is
hilarious.
Going from Mother Mary to Madonna.
It's a Christmas play, isn't it? And I just when we used to do the Christmas play, when the college that my parents worked at, they always made a big deal of it, and just Mary had the best costume that I loved.
Oh my God, that's incredible. I love that they like cheered you.
Yeah, and it kind of like obviously then it opened up so many more conversations. And,
oh man,
know,
yeah.
Like experiences, and also particularly from the last 3 years I've started therapy 3 years ago after the pandemic, and that exploration with someone else and looking back and all those moments and understanding and having acceptance for that younger Francis. I always used to say, oh, I'm not that person anymore, I'm, you know, I'm strong and confident, but I actually needed to go back to all those moments and find acceptance for him, and I've learned so much about myself, and I've got so much more understanding of who I am today because of all those things that happened to me. And I feel like one of the things sometimes I felt towards my parents, even though they're accepting, is my feeling is like, how did you miss that? Because for a long time I felt very lonely as a child, like I felt like I didn't have any friends, but What I was going to say earlier, what I love about our conversation and what he was talking about, Stuart was talking about his mum, is a sense of compassion. And I think sometimes people today are like, this is who I am. If you don't like me, then you're against me. And it's like, no, like, understand where people are coming from, understand their past. I have compassion for my parents. They had a young gay kid in the 90s and 2000s. There was no education. They would have
In the UK as well, there was a law that you weren't allowed to talk about gay in school.
So
if you went to a teacher. Kind of like what's going on in Florida.
So modern day
right now
in Florida.
Yeah, literally kind of stuff's going on in the US.
That changed in the late 90s, early 2000s.
But if you went to a teacher and said, I feel like I'm gay, they wouldn't even be able to talk to you about it because they could get in real.
But it's like having compassion and understanding. And like we are, you know, we're in the online space. People have lots of opinions. And I'm sure you do experience that. And it's like what I can't accept ever is hate. At all. That's not, you know, being hateful and nasty and mean, that is not a good thing. But we can coexist and you can have a completely different opinion of what you think is right and stuff, but we can coexist, you know? Like I know there are really conservative people out there who maybe believe a child needs a mother and a father. That's also okay. But I hope by seeing us, and that's why we're doing our journey online, I hope that you can watch us and go, wow, that's actually looks like a really strong family unit. I sometimes laugh actually because I feel like our relationship and our family is so traditional, but we're just two men. Like we've been together for 14 years, we're married, we have two kids. We're like, it's very traditional. We're just two men, that's all.
That's a really good point.
I was like go. I loved everything.
That is a amazing point that you brought up about just like how having compassion for parents and for people who lack understanding or just don't have the same understanding that you might with situations like this, with being gay, especially. I'm thinking like Stuart's mom in that position, Stuart coming out to her and she's responding negatively. And she doesn't want a hard life for him, for one, but all of her experience and all of the education and everything that she's experienced up until that point has been negative surrounding LGBTQ plus people. So to hold that against her in a way would be kind of a disservice you know, you both went through your relationship and trying to like figure out how to navigate that. And I'm sure that wasn't easy at all, but you didn't give up on her. And I think that's really important.
Can you circle back a little bit to how that ended up being kind of maybe healed?
I feel like that because I was in musical theater, like she'd always come and see all of my shows. So she was so supportive. But what I've learned later in life as well is that me and my mom and my whole family, we all show love in such a different way. Have you ever read The Five Love Languages?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah. We visit those often, don't we, Michael?
Yes.
So my mom shows her love by acts of service. And that's why she does all of our washing. And that's her way of showing her showing us how much she loves us. I need words of affirmation. And so once I learned that, I was like, I understand that she's showing her love in a different way to maybe what I needed, but that's her showing how much she loves me. And so
I just freaking need you to touch me. Just touch me.
Same.
He's telling us how he healed his relationship with his mom.
I'm sorry, keep going.
You don't need to interject about how you need to be touched.
I need love too. It's
okay.
All I'm saying.
I'm so sorry. I should have done this by myself.
Jeez.
I really resonate with that. I like literally just want to be touched sometimes. And Stuart's not. Yeah, he's not into the.
Yeah. If I'm gonna touch you, I want to go all the way. I don't want any like.
It's like if you're letting me do it, you don't stop me. Like if we're starting, don't get to stop it.
It's either everything or nothing.
The train's either leaving the station or she's staying parked. Okay.
Anyway, healing the relationship with mother.
God, man.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
So over time, and so she came to all my shows, and the thing is, my mum is such a good person. I just don't believe that it came from a malicious place whatsoever. No. It just came. So I always had love and respect for her.
And knowing her now, like, she does like to say things that are a bit shocking.
She's so, like, even with, like, the children, she's got strong opinions. Yeah. I said to her this morning, like, mum, please give it a rest. Like, you're too much. Her and Frances have like got friction going on with how to wean a baby. I'm like, just let Frances crack on. It doesn't matter.
Just let me crack on.
That's going to be my mom.
Stand up, because I'm like, I like take it and take it and take it. But today I was like, she's like basically implying that I'm a controlling parent because I was trying
you
to
are,
like, but I was like, you've met your match, Rosemary Armfield. but he'll take it.
So I feel like how I healed it was just, I think, just time. I think with a young mind, you always are your, and being gay and it being my identity and who I was, I took it very, very personally. Yeah. But over time, I've been able to just be able to relax on it and go, it's okay. And like Frances said earlier, especially when we started sharing our family online, we understood that not everyone's going to get us. And that's also fine. And we're showing up because we just want, we want to just show people that love does really exist in a gay relationship and how much, you know, you can have a most unbelievable family. We really could see that vision for ourselves. Yeah. And so just wanted to show that, because in the UK, there just wasn't the representation whatsoever. So, but that's why we kind of like started to show
that. And that representation
like
is so important. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. So important. Because you think about all the people out there who don't have that in their towns, their cities, their villages, wherever they're living in the world. And they don't have that representation. There's no one that they can look to and say like, oh, there's a happy gay family with kids.
Yeah, or maybe you've navigated like a relationship and marriage and you're looking at trying to have babies and
trying to figure out like, oh, can this actually
now you're
work?
Looking up gay dads online and
seeing,
run across
like, something that actually works and looks happy. Oh my God, like that's huge.
Our biggest inspiration was Neil Patrick Harris. Like when he started showing up on Instagram, I was like, I had him on all over our vision board. I was like, this is what I want. Like the Halloween pictures, everything. I was just like, this is everything. I love, he was such inspiration for so many years for us before we even kind of like started the process. Mm-hmm. And so then when we came to doing it, and I was like, the first thing I did was jump online to find other gay dads. Cause I was like, this surrogacy is so confusing when you very first started. I just want to touch base with people.
So we've come out. We've had you both went to drama school.
Yes.
So did you meet because of musical theater then, or like the drama, the arts? How did that bring you two together? Yes.
So we went to the same school at different times, and then I did my first professional job, and I met this girl called Zoe and a girl called Rachel, and they both were like harping on about this amazing guy called Stuart and how funny he was. He was such a fun guy. Oh my God, I know Stuart. He's amazing. So I was like, who's Stuart? Yeah. And then all these like things happened. You know, it's a small network in London of musical theatre performers, I suppose. So then it finally, there was a finally at a moment where my housemate was going away and we were having leaving drinks, and he was at this leaving drinks, and I saw him across the table. I was like, oh, he's very good looking. But I was like, oh, it's Stuart. And I went over and I said, oh, hi, oh, you're Stuart. It's like you're famous. I've heard so much about you. And knowing Stuart, his biggest dream ever
was to be basically Paris Hilton.
Was to be Paris Hilton. So,
is to be
it was
famous.
A genuine, it wasn't even a line, but it was like music to his ears.
I know, I loved it.
Oh, I love that. Those words of affirmation were just lit.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm talking about. That's what Francis is so good at. He's so good at it.
You are.
but randomly, both of our exes, not really for you, but more for me. Francis had like a
fling.
You tried.
I tried.
But my ex, we went out with us both. So I broke up with my ex, and then he started dating Francis. And then that's how I kind of heard about Francis, through my ex. He's like, I'm dating another Cancerian. And I was like, babe, that is just so wrong for you. You're not right for a Cancer. But then I was like, I am. So it's perfect.
Can we talk about that for a second?
Wait, are you both Cancers?
Yeah, we are.
No.
Me too.
I am the only non-Cancer here. Yes.
I knew I liked you.
I'll show myself the door. Oh, it's a lot of Cancer energy. I don't know
He's
if I can
He's the 7th of July and I'm the 8th of July.
I'm the 14th.
Wow.
We need to have a joint birthday party.
Of course. I'm a Libra, and there's a lot of things that occur between Cancers and Libras, and I'm like, what the heck? Are we even compatible? How is this working? But like, well, Cancers, I feel like, are so, I mean, at least for Michael's Cancerian. Yes, but in a structured, strict, I'm not going to let you know I'm emotional kind of way. Just like I'm clammed up, you know, I'm like a crab. I just like go into myself. I go into the other room. I'm not going to talk about it. And then I'm going to leave.
The last time I went into the other room was today when you were wanting to take a call on this table. And I was trying to eat something, and you made me go to the bedroom to eat the food.
Because
so I don't know if it's my fault.
Oh, that call was on the calendar. On the calendar for 15 minutes. I needed the table. And you know what? At 5 minutes before that call, he goes over, he grabs an apple, chocolate chips, peanut butter.
It's the best combination if you don't. If you're judging me right now, you don't know how to live.
And then he just starts crunching down on it, and I'm like, girl, I got a call.
And I was like, can you not take your call in the bedroom, like next to the window?
I can't have you in the background, like munching on an apple.
And I'm like, he was like, no, you can just go somewhere else. I was like, you want me to take my food to the bedroom instead of your call to
because
the bedroom?
Because technically, it's Friday. It's a work day. You have the day off. So I'm still working.
I never have the day off. Everybody knows I never have
a
day
off. And you were eating in my office, so you needed to leave and go to the other
room. Okay, I want to hear more about them. Yeah.
Glad we fleshed that out a bit.
I love these stories.
Okay, so how long were you together before like you were like, okay, we should get married, and then how did like the discussion of kids come up? Like,
so we had like a few meetings and kind of missed meetings, and he messaged me on Facebook, and I didn't have a lot of self-confidence, so I didn't feel like he would fancy me, even though his message, when I read it back now, it's like clearly he was like asking for a date. But we kind of went on a first date, and Stuart said I was cold. But in my mind, I was just so fascinated by him, and I just kept asking questions. I love questions.
It was a lot of questions.
You do.
Love asking questions. And I came away from the first date. I was like, oh, I really like him. And he drove away going, I'm not sure.
I'm just not sure. He was just like so many questions, and I freaking hate questions. I'm just like, tell me something about yourself. ask. But then we went on the second date, and that was really, really good.
Yeah.
The second date was amazing, and I was like, okay. By the third date, I was like,
yeah. Oh, that was good.
So we'll tell you the second date story. So we went to, Frances was opening in the original cast of Legally Blonde in the West End.
Oh, love.
And
wow.
I was doing Whistle Down the Wind at the time. So I was in rehearsal in the day. And then we went to his show in the evening. I picked him up in my car and then we snogged for the first time in the car. Oh, it was such a good kiss.
This is the first time snog has ever been on the podcast, and I'm here for it.
I'm guessing there was less questions asked during that time, which helped make the date better for you.
Yeah, he was like, stop asking the questions, and that tongue was used in a different way.
That's
the funny
great.
Thing about our relationship, though, is that it's like some of our friends were like unsure if we were right for
compatible,
each other because they had their own opinions, like of
right, two
who
cancers
we were.
Coming together. Yep.
Yeah. And I suppose, and he was just about to go on tour. With
and
the
I'm
UK.
Very different to Frances in terms of our personalities
very
are
different.
Like polar. Although we're the same star sign, we are totally opposite. The way we think, the way we're wired. Is completely polar opposite.
But we love the same things. Like we adore that. Anyway, so he's about to go away like for 9 months touring around the UK and I'm going to be in London. So it's not like the best time to start a relationship.
Yeah.
But all I can, like, sometimes I get frustrated with when I'm helping our female friends go on dates because, or find love, because it felt so downstream. Everything was like, yes, of course, yes, yes, of course, yes, of course. So there was like a situation where we had 5 dates and then he left to go on tour. And then and he was like, I'm going to be in Liverpool, which is like 3 hours away from London. For the UK, it's a bit more travel. I know for the US, three hours like normal.
Nothing.
Like, it's a bit further. And I was like, I'll come visit you. And then the next 9 months, I would basically we had different days off because we did 8 shows a week in the musicals. I would go on a Tuesday to wherever he was in the UK and he would come back to London on a Sunday. But there was never a question in my mind of, am I overbearing? Is he going to be running away because I'm too committed? It was just like,
It just felt right.
It was just like very early on, just kind of just felt great. And we just lent into it. And I suppose after that, your show finished, we moved in after a year, I think.
After that show finished, I kind of moved in with you straight away.
Yeah, we moved in after a year, and we had a dog by the second
year.
So it was like quite quick.
A full commitment.
But you know what's quite interesting, going back to the mum's story about kind of that, when did that acceptance change? I was very afraid of his mum, still a little bit afraid, but because she was like, prove me, you know, who are you, basically.
Right. And she'd bring my washing.
Yeah, who are you and whatever. And she's got this kind of, she's like a bit like Big Brother. It's like she knows and you're like, how does she know? But she just knows. You can't keep anything from her. But the way we kind of, we got the dog and I realized, I remember feeling sad at the thought that I wouldn't feel accepted by his family. That made me feel really, really sad. And we got the dog and she's got dogs. And I thought, I need advice. And there's no better way than to connect two people when someone likes to give advice. So I was like, what do I do with the dog? And it was a way, the dog connected us and then grew our relationship. And so we've got Dolly to thank for that. And she's been in a big, big part of our life since then. So that kind of, I suppose, resolved the weirdness of it. And from that, and, you know, having kids was another question, was another thing to
she's
raise
been,
up again.
She's been amazing.
She's been amazing with the kids, but the process of we are going to have kids was another difficult conversation, wasn't it?
Yeah, because she just wasn't expecting it.
Yeah.
So I love the point of if you're having trouble with somebody like an in-law, a great bridge to that is to ask them for advice. And
it's
you go into it with the right mentality, because a lot of the times getting unsolicited advice does the exact opposite. But if you're like, I need to work on this relationship, I'm going to ask for advice, just anything. And then like, take it.
Yeah.
I love that. That's great. Yeah. That's such a good piece of like, that's a good tip and trick for relationships. And take it.
But I mean, maybe because I like to keep the peace, maybe I don't like confrontation, but
no,
I was willing to, I think sometimes people sit in there like, oh, she did this, but I was willing to forget all those things that maybe were not, you know, so not she ever was nasty to me, but you know, a good relationship was worth more to me than hanging up on things that didn't really matter.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. So how long were you together before you guys got married?
10 years.
Wow. Whoa, so when did you... Wait, so you've been together
We
were supposed to get married in our 10th year, but obviously COVID happened. So we ended up getting married in our 11th year.
But we met when I was 22, 25. So like we met before... We were together before gay marriage was legal in the UK.
Yeah.
So
it wasn't allowed.
Okay.
And we weren't even thinking, but we always talk about this, like all the laws have changed in the UK just in time to the point when we've been ready to make those decisions. Like we feel like the really lucky generation where, and now having a family, you know, of course I know there's lots of, you know, different opinions in the world. And I know right now there's strong conservative views, especially in the US, but I feel like having a kid now in the UK, like, it feels so, even to be sharing our story online and to have a lot of positivity coming back is it feels like a great time for that.
So what was the law that kind of helped with the surrogacy journey or like becoming parents? And then you guys are, I believe, our first like true international surrogacy couple. So I'm like so interested to hear what that process was like and how you ended up choosing that. And maybe, like, did you choose that because, like, adoption is maybe tricky in the UK or it just it felt right? Or, you know, how did you have that conversation and how did that all come down?
Because of Neil Patrick Harris, surrogacy was He was kind of like our inspiration, was like, okay, we're going to do that. So we actually started the process in America because we didn't, in the UK, you can't ask someone to be your surrogate. They have to offer. It's against the law to ask someone to be a surrogate.
Oh, just to ask them?
Wow.
Yeah.
And you can't pay them.
You can't pay them either.
I knew you couldn't pay them. I didn't realize you couldn't solicit. Just like, hey, we're looking for a surrogate. Wow. Yeah. That's so weird.
But they can offer? Can they offer?
They can offer.
They can offer, but you can't ask.
They can. Yeah.
How would they know?
So they have to offer a surrogate. I'll be your surrogate, but you can't say, would you be my surrogate?
I feel like this would come to like very passive aggressive hinting. Like,
oh my gosh.
You're a female. Oh, you're 33, 35. You have kids. You don't want any more kids.
But you love being pregnant. But you love being pregnant. That is amazing. Like my husband and I are just so
I would really interested love a child someday.
In a womb and a uterus. And like it would be amazing if there was someone in
but
this
I'm never
world.
Gonna like come out and ask for it just outright, you know, that's never gonna happen.
I did not know that. That's weird.
Yeah.
I like not paying them, I understand.
It's a technicality, you know.
What in the world?
Interesting.
So there's loads of Facebook groups in the UK where you go on these Facebook groups and you like make friends with surrogates, but you're not allowed to, you can say who you are, but you can't ask them. At all. So they do like lots of meetups. But anyway, so that kind of that process for us felt like too labored and too long. And so we were like, we don't really want that for ourselves. So we decided we were going to do the whole process in the US. So we found an egg donor, we found a surrogate, and we were going to do that obviously in 2020 when everything went crazy. But then our egg donor pulled out in the US. We were documenting the whole thing online. And then one of my friends said, I'll be your surrogate. Although it's different to an egg donor. She's like, I'll be your surrogate. And then that's when we started thinking to ourselves, okay, actually, if we could do this process in the UK, that would be amazing.
Yeah, so we ended up doing a hybrid of the US and the UK. So we did all the IVF and all. We have a doctor in San Diego. But we ended up having UK surrogate, which... For both of our journeys, which was actually the best decision for us because we got the best doctors and, you know, we have in the US. So in the UK, when you look at egg donors, there are egg donors, you're not allowed to see photos of them. It's very anonymous. So
you don't know anything. You just have a piece of paper with like
their details and stuff. Yeah. So it was really important. We wanted to kind of see who they were. And going back to your question before, was like, you know, adoption, it was always clear to us that we wanted to have our own kids. And adoption is actually a really hard process. I'm sure it's the same in the US. You know, they look through every part of your life. It's like, it's It's really intense. And we just, I just felt this real thing to have our own kids. And, you know, sometimes right. people, that's the classic line sometimes people say online. It's like, why didn't you just adopt? My question to them is, well, why didn't you adopt? You know, like, what makes us different to you?
Totally.
But, individuals yes, can adopt. That is something that individuals can do.
Totally,
so,
totally.
I mean, yeah.
Just exactly. So
just a thought.
We did this mixture, and it was kind of great because it meant that because of the COVID time with the first journey, that we would have been hardly been able to visit or anything like that. But she was here. She lived 3 hours away from
us.
So
we flew our surrogate over to the US to do the
transfer.
Their transfer. Yeah. Thank you. And then she flew back then to the UK. So we do that twice over. Obviously, there are two different surrogates.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we've had two friends.
And both of our surrogates have been friends, like really good.
Oh my God.
That's amazing.
This is like dream scenario.
It really is. When we think about when we know how hard it is to match with surrogates these days, like right now, like we count ourselves so lucky that. You know,
and we have a great relationship with both of them, and it was just
oh my
perfect.
God,
it was
so good. Yeah, it was, and it took both times, like for both of your surrogacy journeys, your first flight out, that was the transfer, and it worked. Oh my God, that's amazing.
That is incredible.
Again, like it just crazy how that really happened. You know, like especially the second time we flew out.
The first time though, we didn't expect it wouldn't. The first time we was like, of course, you're going to put an embryo in. It's going to work.
Were naive, but so the naivety naive. Played in our kind of favor because we didn't question it.
Yeah, and the second time we were a little bit more
scared. Oh, what if it goes wrong? What if this happens? And and then the numbers were low when she was first pregnant. They were like, oh, you know, don't get too excited. But now when I think about our daughter Rebel, I see that how could the numbers be low? You're like strong in the world. But it was an amazing... It feels good. Kind of, you talked about the beginning. You said, you know, it'd be, you know, we know you as dads, and we want to know about your kind of before life and how we feel about our life right now. Although we're in the thick of parenting, we have completed our two journeys, so we do feel like we're ready to also explore not just being dads. Because Stuart and I have big personalities and careers and things we want to do outside of being dads. But and it's kind of it's perfect. It's like, you know, we're ready to. Explore those things again.
But I feel like being dads has absolutely shaped us so much. These past 2 years have been like transformative. It's been incredible. Right. Like, you know, people say like your life ends when you have kids. I feel like our life literally got started when we had kids, and it's been incredible. Like the whole experience, although we've had a hard day today, it's been tough. Really didn't sleep very much last night. The general theme of being a parent has been one of the most unbelievable, incredible experiences and lessons for ourselves as well. Yeah.
I feel like from this is just my personal story. I felt like before becoming a dad, I felt lost for quite a few years. Being a dad is like I found myself almost, and it's almost like meeting. I've also experienced meeting my younger self through our kids as well. So it's been this amazing like spiritual everything journey. Like it's challenging, but it's been the best thing that's ever happened to me and for both of us. I feel.
I think that's something that I often think about when we're thinking about our journey with having kids, and when that happens, it happens. But when you have kids and you go through that first year, 2 years of early parenting, that's an experience that a lot of people describe as transformative, as something life-changing, as something the kid have never imagined. And it's true. I can't really imagine what that's going to be like.
No. Yeah.
And so there's kind of this big question mark, this big mystery. And I've heard so many great things about it from couples and people raising kids. But I'm like, my God, what does that actually feel like? Mm-hmm. You can't. It doesn't matter how many stories I hear reading about it, whatever. I'm never going to know until I go through it and actually experience it for myself to see like this is what people are talking about with parenting. And that's kind of exciting. That's really exciting. You know,
how did you guys find your like egg donor and IVF clinic? Like, was that on a recommendation or did you just do a ton of research? Was it in California? Was it in?
San Diego.
Yeah.
Our place was in San Diego, but it was through a friend of a friend that worked with an agency over in America that kind of like suggested we speak to this guy, the doctor in San Diego. And then once we spoke to him, as soon as we got off on the call with him, I was like, he's the one. Like, yeah. I didn't need to do any more research. He was so incredible and so personable. And so, like, he gave us his WhatsApp number. And I was like, oh, my God, who does that?
I know that in America, you guys don't really use WhatsApp. But we were like, as Europeans, we're like, oh, my gosh, he's got WhatsApp. We feel seen.
No,
we're just not very email people, you know. Like, Stuart never uses email, so... No. Hence missing probably the first appointment.
The email moves so slowly. So, like, but a doctor giving you their WhatsApp number, like, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's amazing.
I'd be like, where do I sign? Because that's incredible.
That is incredible.
I've never you heard that before.
But he made us feel, like, heard. And just he wasn't just, like, a medical speak. He was, like, personable and just...
He was incredible. Yeah,
and you know, when you're giving someone that much money and that much trust, it's expensive. It's not really, we know that. We want to make sure that the experience is good. And yeah, so he was the first person. Then we were kind of looking around at lots of different donor agencies. I suppose, you know, all these different agencies are like, you know, we're great for this, but ultimately it's not really about the agency. Yes, you want the experience to be good, but you're looking for that person that's really right for you. And you just have to find the person. And Stuart was very good at that. He looked at me.
Did you go through an agency because you found your own surrogate? So
we went through an agency. An egg donor agency.
Egg agency.
Oh, egg donor agency.
Not like an agency doing the whole thing for us.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
We were going to, but then when it changed, when our friend offered, then we didn't do it. So I suppose there was a lot of learning as well, because no one really knows. There's no rule book. And I think, again, that's a reason for sharing online. And that's important for connecting with other people who are going through it. It's like, it's forever changing, you know, being the open to answer people's questions. And, you know, we have, everyone's experience is so unique. And yeah, just helping the next generation of people how to do it. Because there are so many things. And then, you know, then for us being international, it's like, you know, coming back to the UK. And then what's the laws in the UK? It's just so many levels of stuff.
One thing I wanted to ask, because I saw, obviously it wasn't like yesterday, because Rebel's now, you said 5.5 months, right? Or 5 months?
5.5.
The feeling of like having Rio, but then the feeling of like introducing Rio to Rebel.
That moment when we did it, we hired a videographer, because we've kind of like, we're building Rio up to, like, every night before Rebel was born, he used to put a baby to bed, like a little toy baby, just to kind of like build him up, know there was someone coming, and we're like, oh, you're gonna have a little sister soon that you're gonna be able to put to bed, all that kind of stuff, to kind of build him up. So when we introduced him for the first time, you hadn't slept that whole night because you were up, and it was just so emotional. It was just seeing Rio just like absolutely from day one.
And we didn't know what it was going to be like, because, you know, sometimes they can get angry because it's like, who is this? Like, they can get jealous. Yeah. And I just didn't know what it would be like. But he just was just super joyful. And I was like, oh my God, this is like too much. It was just,
it's so amazing. And he's been so amazing ever since. Like, even this morning in bed, it's just like, the first thing he shouted this morning when he woke up was, Rebel, I want Rebel, I want Rebel. It's like, it breaks your heart.
Yeah, it really so is. Cute. And I mean, the one thing I'd say, I suppose, it's you, when you meet your baby for the first time, people talk about instant love, but I didn't feel instant love. You just feel like shocked and overwhelmed and like, shit, I've got to look, sudden responsibility of to look after like the baby. But that love grows and the bond grows and grows and grows. So we'd had this amazing bond with Rio, and then we met Rebel, and I knew that second time that I'm looking forward to for that bond to grow. But it was like introducing our daughter to someone that we love so much. Like, that was just like, I was like, oh my God, I can't stop crying. But now, Rebel being 5 months, like, and knowing her more and like her personality, like, it feels like our family is like kind of complete. It feels like balanced, it feels equal, it feels, it feels really nice.
Well, I think next time that you guys are bringing the family to Hawaii, let us know.
Oh my God, I'll babysit, I'll do anything.
Well, we can come to Oregon, because I've never been to Oregon.
It's beautiful.
You should
please
take.
Do.
Wait, do you fly British? I know some people don't like to fly British Airways.
No, you do. Why do they not? Why do they
no, it's not.
Fly.
It's not. It's
we
not
have people who like, only like fly Virgin.
We have friends who are very brand loyal. So I get it.
Direct flight, London to Portland, hang out for a few days, and then direct flight, Portland to Hawaii.
Yeah.
Oh, perfect. Great. We'll definitely do that next year. Yeah. We're going to Hawaii every year, every January.
I know. I remember you saying that.
Yeah. The direct flight from London to Oregon to Portland is just 9 hours.
9.5.
You go to bed, you wake up in Oregon.
No, it's terrible. It's just like the UK in January.
Horrible in January. Not great.
It's probably not as bad as London.
Not as bad as London. In January.
It's probably not as bad, but it's kind of similar.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much again. It's like creeping on like 10:30 your time, and you said you didn't get any sleep last night. So
we're going to let you go sleep.
You might need to go get some shut eye. Now, you guys have two handles, right? So, Francis Haugen and Stuart Armfield.
Stewie Armfield.
That's right. Yep.
So, everybody, well, if you're not following these two, I don't know what you're doing. But at Stewie Armfield.
As Michael would say, get out from under your rock.
Literally, get out from under your rock.
And follow these guys on all the platforms.
Them everywhere. Yes. And see their beautiful family
grow. Do you guys have any shout outs? Anything that's coming up or that you'd like to bring attention to before we go?
I just want to say, like, I absolutely love following you both because I love all the relationship stuff you share, particularly because I see myself in one of you and Stuart will probably see it. Like, it's like the classic, like, two different people in the relationship. And I just really relate to that. I'm like,
yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You are good at words of affirmation.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I feel heard. Have you got any shout outs?
No, not really. Just a lot of love.
Yeah.
Just a lot of love. Wonderful. Are you performing right now in anything specific?
No, I won't let Francis perform quite yet. Like, me looking after two kids every single night, eight nights a week,
seven nights a week, six nights a week.
Is a no.
But in the future, maybe.
In the future, absolutely, 100%. But I just need to get the kids to a certain age.
That'd be so exciting.
Yeah, I'd love to do something again, but I, as a TikTok star, as the lead.
We're loving TikTok. Like, TikTok's changed our lives. It's been the most amazing thing.
Yeah, so seriously, though.
We get to express our creativity via the app. Yeah. It's been just the best thing for us.
And especially as a parent, like, we're so grateful that we get to be both at home with the kids and then also express our creativity, which is amazing.
To get the best of both worlds.
You get the best.
Thank you, Hannah Montana.
You've got the best comebacks.
You are both hilarious.
And of course, as always, please leave a rating and review
on your favorite podcast, which is this one, obviously.
It means so much to us when you do. We love it. We've been getting comments on the reviews, and I've really enjoyed reading through them. We need to start reading those reviews again on episodes.
One of these days, we'll be prepared.
We got to, like, go through them again. Anyway, you can email us at whosyourdaddypod@gmail.com. We're also on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. All of those links are down in... I say that because I'm so used to YouTube.
Well, I mean, technically this is on YouTube and it's in the podcast apps.
Oh, that's true.
I know. So you're not, like, wrong, but you're not, like, you know, wrapping everything up in the link. The links are in the notes, either in the show notes or whatever they're called, or they're down below.
Perfect.
You know where the words on these go. And so just look there.
We're on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, all the different places. The link is in the show notes or in the description below, depending on if you're watching this or if you're listening on a podcast.
Amazing. You did so good.
Thank you so much. All right. Ready?
And
close
until next,
out?
Yes. Thank you for listening, as always. And until next time,
Daddy's out.
Daddy's out.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.